If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
The actual interesting part to me was this idea of making people face very distinctly and very in like a very clear way the, not so much the price, but the idea that there was going to be ramifications for climate change that were going to mean that things were dying as we sort of watched them, and that there was no saving those places now, and that all we could do was sort of sit at the bedside of these places and care for them, even if that caring didn't give us a victory.
That's the voice of Max Myers, a game designer from Melbourne and the creator of Soon Only the Ocean. And I'm Adam Christou from Pixel Sift. Soon Only the Ocean is a game about grief, loss, and climate change. It encourages players to become the caretaker of Glen Island, a fictional location off the coast of Victoria, and document the last remaining years until the rising water levels reclaim the land. There's just one catch. Soon Only the Ocean played out in real time, and on Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, Glen Island was finally claimed by the sea. I hopped online with Max to talk about what made him want to create the game, and the experience of releasing a game that tapped into the core of existential dread in the middle of a global pandemic.
So I just finished making Paint Game, which I'd released at at some point last year. I can't exactly remember the date, but I'd made Paint Game. It was chugging along, doing what it did. And the concept originally began as I'd been fiddling around with stuff. I had this tree building algorithm from one of my other games called Tree Game. I had a couple of other bits and pieces, and I was really interested in the idea of making games about sort of like that made people interact in different ways and in ways that wasn't sort of expected of traditional video games. So one of the big things for me was the original design pitch of the game that I was just talking to a friend about was that it was an online island. And by online, I don't mean that like it was a multiplayer experience, but the island sea level was dependent on how long everyone had played the game. So the original pitch was like, oh, you have the island is going to be around for sort of like 3 days, but every time someone logs into the game and spends like 30 minutes on the island, that raises the sea level by some amount. And so I was just talking to my friend about this, and he highlighted that he was like, oh, it's a really interesting concept around specifically climate change. And I'd obviously been thinking about the climate change stuff to do with it, but my partner's an environmental scientist. And so I'd been thinking about it really deeply. And so I went home, started making the game, and realized that the actual interesting part to me was this idea of making people face very distinctly and very in like a very clear way the, not so much the price, but the idea that there was going to be ramifications for climate change that were going to mean that things died, so to speak, or like that things were dying as we sort of watched them, and that there was no saving those places now, that they were beyond a concept of like actually saving or winning, so to speak, that there was no win thing, and that all we could do was sort of sit at the bedside of these places and sort of like care for them, even if that caring didn't give us a victory, that it was more about just sitting with something, and also fed into some ideas I've had around sort of my experiences with my grandmother, who's passing away as well, sort of like watching that deterioration, knowing there's nothing you can do, but caring nonetheless, and wanting to make it as comfortable or give as much back as you can, knowing that it, in the end, there is no way you can win. There is no victory, so to speak.
I find that really interesting that, yeah, this is a very passive experience at its heart. You've basically got a front row seat to the end of an island. But I'm interested why and how you came about the idea to have it run over the length of time that it did. I'm wondering if that played into the reasons as to why you wanted people exploring this island to visit it over multiple years.
Yeah, like 100%. I wanted to do exactly as you said. Like, I wanted to highlight that idea that ecological collapse is something that happens on an imperceptible level, that it's easy to not think about it when it isn't shoved in our face, especially around things like hearing my partner talk about the Great Barrier Reef and hearing about the collapse of the Amazon. It's all very well and good when we think about it as single events. It's like, oh, there was a mass bleaching event recently. Oh, there was this, there was that. But the actual way that climate change is going to happen is going to be in tiny ways. Like, we've recently seen some of the most devastating bushfires in Australia, but that's on the back of horrid flooding last year. That's on the back of like a slow increase in the erraticness of our environments. That's on the back of warmer and warmer summers, of winters that are getting even more erratic in terms of days that are too warm or days that are too cold. I wanted that time aspect to be something that we were aware of, but gave you the opportunity to see it happen in a way that humans perceived, because humans, like, we're not good at long scales. We're incredibly bad at them. So I wanted to condense that scale and give you a space that you might start caring about and that you might then start grieving.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that this game is released during, I guess, an existential crisis of dread that feels very fast and feels very real. How are you feeling about people playing this game during such a fast-moving moment of existential dread like the one that we're in right now?
It's weird, and it's an interesting thing for me to think about, because like for you to bring up, because releasing the game when I did wasn't so much a case of like me, like I wasn't expressly thinking about COVID, but it was definitely a factor, because it's sort of like, I remember the weeks leading up to releasing it, all I could think about was I just wanted this thing done. I just wanted it over. I just wanted it to end. Like, I wanted to get it off my brain. I wanted to move on to something else. I wanted to stop thinking about this particular island, and not in the way that like I was sick of it or I thought it was bad, but that it was becoming it was starting to feel like a toxic relationship with the game. And so that was one of the reasons why I released it. But I think that also fed into COVID and all of that sort of stuff. And the other thing was, in the back of my head, I was thinking maybe this is a way to highlight, to give people an opportunity, one, to visit a place that they are encouraged to, but then to give them something, give them, make them grapple with the existential dread that has felt like it's invaded sort of my thinking as well. And then I also wanted to give people a place that they could escape to, but then also link back to their own experiences in this global crisis, because it's sort of like, it felt like we forgot climate change was happening, because climate change sure as hell has not stopped for a global pandemic. The thing I do want to highlight, though, which is I think is super important about all of this sort of stuff, especially thinking about existential dread, is that one of the big things that the COVID thing has highlighted for me, at least, is that the importance of attending to our core sort of stuff. Like, we need to feel safe. We need to feel comfortable in our own environment first and foremost, and then we can start worrying about the bigger things. And that's kind of like what COVID's highlighted, especially around this sort of game, is that it was kind of a little bit silly of me to release it at the point that I did, because it's sort of like asking people, as you say, to think about like an existential dread built on an existential dread built on an existential dread. And it's like, I just need to not. I need to play some Animal Crossing. I need to like think about my turnip prices, and that's it. Like that's as far as I'm getting.
I feel that too, but at the same time, I'm really grateful that this game kind of came out in this period. It allowed me to, I guess, have that space. It was really an environment for me to go back to on a day-to-day basis, like a very slow, patient game about understanding that you have a lack of control and that something is going away and that you can't prevent that. I'm really keen to talk about one of the big themes of the game, which is contemplation and thinking about what is being lost and what that means to different people in particular. I'm curious about the character of the caretaker that you play as well. Was there a moment where you decided that that caretaker would have an internal narrative and would have a character?
It was fairly early on in the design process, as I was as I got the time aspect in, I got the measuring aspects in, I'd got a lot of these bits and pieces inside the game. Like the core loop was there. You were able to walk up to the island, you were able to like record water levels, you were able to record the weather station. And then I realized that it wasn't a place until it had a history, that it didn't feel like it existed, or that it was anything that was that mattered. That like there was an aspect of, why do I care about this place if I'm not being brought into it, if I'm not being made to care about it? And that's not to say that like we should have to care about each and every portion of environment, but specifically the problem with video game environments is it's very much a case of like, okay, why does this one matter when there's all of this sort of stuff outside? Like we care about places in video games because we're encouraged to, or we're given space to. And so that was why I wanted to give a face and I wanted to decolonize my work as best as possible, especially as like a white person raised in Australia. It was important to me to not have the history step away from what I would perceive as the history that I was told or taught of in school, and instead focus on a history that I think, or an understanding of land that I think is more important to highlight now, especially with climate change.
I wanted to ask about that in particular. I know that you did some cultural work going into this game, and you had a consultant, Phoebe Watson, who's currently working with Dragon Bear Studios on their upcoming game, Chaos Tavern. Tell me a bit about the process of working with Phoebe and the work that you put into to kind of really centralize and focus First Nations and Indigenous voices in this game.
Working with Phoebe was wonderful. Phoebe helped me. Like the thing that I got in contact with Phoebe about was, I got in contact because sort of like, I'm not an Indigenous person. And so it felt that like instantly, as soon as I had the thought of like, I want to highlight First Nations perspective, I was like, okay, cool. I need to talk to someone about this. I have to, I can't just make this up as I go along. So I did some research around seasonal stuff. I messaged Phoebe and gave her a copy of the game. I think she played one or two versions of it, and she gave me some feedback of things that I could add to really highlight. Not so much like to be like, oh, like this is a game about an Indigenous experience, but to highlight the fact that there was Indigenous stuff here. So adding the seasons' names at the start of the game, adding scar trees, and there are shell middens at the very start of the game, adding a bunch of more native plants, and adding some aspects of how First Nations people speak, talk about fire and things like that. So adding a different perspective that when I had first been adding writing to the game, and when I'd first been thinking about things to add that I wouldn't have even thought through. So Phoebe really brought an aspect that allowed me to add an understanding that this place was not just an island that existed or that came into existence or was first discovered by white people, that it was an island that had been used by this culture, that had been used by this group of people, this family of people for many, many generations. This island had existed for a while, but had been gone through many purposes, and then when you came to the island, it was already sort of like at the end of its life, that it had been part of a longer story, both in terms of how it was used by like the dominant culture and the dominant white culture, and used by First Nations Indigenous people, especially again, when you're talking about climate change and when we're talking about land, especially in Australia, it would feel wrong of me to do anything other than try and forefront First Nations and Indigenous experiences.
And that was Max Myers, independent game designer from Melbourne and the creator of Soon Only the Ocean. It's available now on itch.io, with all proceeds going towards SEED, an Indigenous youth-led organisation fighting for climate action. If you enjoyed this episode, you can check out the written article. It's a bit of a personal look at my time on Glen Island, complete with pictures and snaps that I took over the past 30 days. You can find that along with many other articles, videos and podcasts at pixelsift.com.au. Music and sound from this episode was used with permission and taken from the game Soon Only the Ocean, composed by Nat Wesley, with field recordings curated by Max Myers. I'm Adam Christou, and that's all for now.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.